And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, middle of the work week, November 7th, 2018, 12 minutes past the hour, and the elections are over. Thank goodness we were on the air last night here for 4 hours and 20 minutes. 7:10 until 11:30, non-stop. I want to thank Charlie Evers. I want to thank Sean Kraft for being in studio. I want to thank Terry Tackett for being at Democratic and Republican headquarters. And I want to thank Linda Sims for the tremendous job she did. She had a cold, and she stuck it out at the Board of Elections from 7 o'clock until after 11:30 to give us all the results. We thank her tremendously. So, and we also thank Domino's Pizza, our supporter yesterday. Telephone number 740-383-3030. Now, as we go on today, we are going to talk about the election. We had the prep show on Monday, the preview to the election. Yesterday, we had the election show with Governor Ted Strickland in studio, Mary Ellen Withrow, Mayor Schertzer, Satch Sullinger, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. What a show we had yesterday. And today, we're going to bring back our guest from Monday, Tanner Hale, to talk about the elections, a little different from the predictions that were made on Monday by Tanner, but we'll discuss all that. And Eleanor Clift, you may know her best for her long-running role on television's The McLaughlin Group as a panelist, television series The McLaughlin Group, and her work currently as a reporter for The Daily Beast. She'll be on next hour. But this hour, we're going to spend with Tanner Hale. Tanner, how are you?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you doing?
Good. So where did you spend last night at?
So I spent a lot of yesterday just out in the field doing some canvassing, and I did. I went to class. Then I went to Jeff Ratliff's watch party out at the mall, and then I was at Democratic headquarters. So had a little bit of a busy day yesterday just getting all around, but very, very fun day.
Now, let's start here because Terry Tackett was at Democratic headquarters. As I say, we did not go off the air last night until after 11:30. He had said Democratic headquarters had packed up because he was back in the studio, I believe, by 10 o'clock last night.
Yeah, I mean, I was hitting bed about 9. I was a little tired, so please forgive me. There's some a loud noise. Oh, my goodness. Sorry, there's a loud noise.
No, that's okay.
Anyways, so, yeah, I rolled out of headquarters last night around, like, 9, just because I wanted to get home. I was a little exhausted, and I'm an early riser, so I try to go to bed as early as I can.
Well, let's start national, then we'll work our way back locally. Now, last night, the Democrats did take the House. Now, that was suspected. They lost seats in the Senate. President Trump has just given a press conference where he said Nancy Pelosi deserves to be Speaker of the House. What'd you make of that?
Well, I did see the president's tweet about that. And, you know, last night we saw what's been predicted since about June or July. And it's something that we talked about on the show Monday, where we believed the Democrats were going to win the House. We believed that the Republicans were going to maintain the majority in the Senate, if not pick up some seats. And it was hard. It was very hard because there was 42 Republican senators that did not have re-election last night, whereas I believe the number for the Democrats is only 23. So this election, as far as the Senate goes, was oddly stacked against the Democrats. And the Democrats were aware of that. There wasn't much anticipation that they were going to take the majority. Now, there's a lot of optimism that maybe with that blue wave, they would maybe squeak one out in Tennessee, squeak one out in Texas. But statistically and historically, it was just so improbable to assume that the Democrats were going to win the majority. So as far as the president's tweet about Nancy Pelosi, he's putting pressure on the Democrats. Nancy Pelosi would assume the responsibilities of Speaker if she was elected, given that she's the minority leader right now. And it's been a hot topic among the Democratic Party. Who do we make our speaker? Because there's no doubt about it that Nancy Pelosi has been negatively attached to ads run by Republicans for the better part of a decade. as far as hitting the party. So Donald Trump is sitting back going, if you elect Nancy Pelosi, I'll have a field day. If you don't, well, I don't know if that's the best idea, because Nancy Pelosi is very well known in the Democratic Party. She's a great fundraiser, and she has experience doing the job before. She was Speaker before John Boehner.
Yeah, but so, wouldn't this be a bad idea for the Democrats to get rid of her at this point? Yes, she has been the minority leader for 8 years, but under her minority leader leadership, they have taken back the House.
You know, very well. And I think last night she gave a lot of credit to the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, for winning back those seats. And the Democrats were competitive in a lot of districts last night that they're usually not competitive in. Even the 12th district, that was within 5 points. I mean, that's the Cook Partisan Index on that. That's a Republican district by like 11, 12 points before we even introduced the candidates. I mean, that's a district that Pat Tiberi won double digits every single election. So to answer your question, I don't know if it would be the smartest move or not. I think that that's going to be an evolutionary conversation as we move towards January, and that decision has to be made. But there's a lot of Democrats that ran on, I'm not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, because I think we need to move the party in a new direction. But there's no doubt about it, Nancy Pelosi has a very strong foothold in the Democratic Party. She's responsible for getting a lot of Democrats elected and reelected. So we'll see how it goes. But well, I imagine it might... sorry, Scott, just one more thing. I imagine that it would be a lot like it was a couple of years ago, where you'll have a challenger who did get about 60, 70 votes to be minority leader, but Nancy Pelosi is likely to be the Speaker.
Let's start in Texas. Now, everybody said that Ted Cruz would probably win this, and he certainly did. Why was so much attention paid to that, and are we going to hear from this Beto again after using foul language on live television last night and kind of going down in defeat early? I think people thought it would stretch out longer than that.
You know, and there's a lot of votes that were needed to be counted in Texas, and it was astonishing how close a Democrat was to winning a statewide election in Texas, especially against a Republican incumbent. It's remarkable, and the thing about Beto, he's a national fundraising icon. I mean, he had a lot of money coming in outside of Texas. National Democrats were pushing him left and right towards the end of the campaign. Look, the numbers don't match up. I don't know how you win Texas. He said, I believe that we can. And he was almost right. I don't think that's going to be the last we see at Beto. And I hear, you know, obviously rumors about him running for president in 2020. He very well could. He very well couldn't. I'm not the one to say. But I definitely think that he has a role in politics. And he's definitely going to find a spot somewhere. I just don't know what that would look like yet.
Let's go to Georgia. In Georgia, we saw President Obama. We saw Oprah Winfrey. We saw the Republican candidate for governor in Georgia, who is also the Secretary of State, Mr. Kemp, do some things in the last few days. And people still thought it was going to be a recountable district. People thought Stacey Abrams, in all the polls I saw, that she was leading by a point or two. And in the end, she loses by about 2 points. And Brian Kemp is reelected the Republican governor of Georgia. How was that so misjudged? And why did Obama and Oprah not turn out the votes they thought they would?
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, at the end of the day, when it goes to people voting, it comes down to turnout. And Republicans still have a foothold in the state of Georgia. It's very hard for Democrats to win in Georgia. But, and honestly, Georgia's a state that I want to continue to watch over the next course of these two cycles, because Georgia could be the new Ohio. Because as far as I'm concerned, Georgia is looking a little more competitive statewide than Ohio is looking competitive statewide. So to answer your question, there was a lot of attention on this race. you have a history possibly in the making with her being the first African-American woman to ever be elected as governor in the state of Georgia. I don't know what role that played into the vote, especially in a state that is still known to be red. But nonetheless, I think there was a lot of optimism about the state of Georgia and the direction that they're moving. And last night, history was almost made.
Well, here's one that's interesting. Now, those, yes, people would say those are Republican states. But a state that people would not say is Republican, and I think at this point people would say more is Democrat, is Florida. And last night, we saw Andrew Gillum, the Democrat, he was ahead by 5 or 6 points in the polls I saw over DeSantis, and DeSantis defeated him last night. Now, it was only by 0.7%, but he did do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Florida has been an interesting state to watch over the last two cycles because Florida, you're absolutely right. You know, one could consider it Republican, one could consider it Democrat. I think it really does come down to which pockets come out, because you have the top half of the state that is very conservative, and that's the areas that more people would associate with the swamp and, you know, just a more rural and more agricultural part of Florida, where the bottom half, you know, the part that has Miami and Tampa, that area leans more Democratic, and that's where a lot of the pockets of votes come out for Democrats. So it really does come down to which part of the state comes out better. And it is so razor thin in Florida. It's remarkable. But the Florida Republican Party, they turn out voters so well, and they use their models in such a unique and interesting way where they can pretty much determine before Election Day, we expect X amount of voters to come out, and they'll be within 10,000, 15,000 votes. And they turn it into, we don't need to convince 51% of the public to elect our candidates. We just need the 50.1% that we identify to get to the polls. If we do that, we can't lose. And that's what happened in Florida last night.
Well, and we're talking about the Senate in Florida too, and again, an area that people thought had the Democratic momentum. It was an incumbent Democratic senator, Bill Nelson, in Florida. Rick Scott left the governorship to go run against the incumbent Bill Nelson. Everybody thought that was going to be a safe seat for Bill Nelson. They did not expect that to flip. They expected it to be close, but not flip. It did. Now, there's going to be a recount. Bill Nelson is asking for a recount, but they have projected that Rick Scott will be the senator from Florida. So now Florida has another Republican senator.
Yeah, they do. And you obviously will see how the recount goes. I don't imagine, and I think that you might agree with me on this, it might not change the result. Might change the vote count. Maybe it might make it slimmer. Who knows? But I don't think it's going to actually flip the race. I don't know about you, but I always had a gut feeling that Rick Scott was going to win that election. He's the governor of the state. He has a huge role in the Florida Republican Party, and he's very well known. And Bill Nelson, although he was an entrenched incumbent, and as we kind of know about like political science, that over time the incumbency advantage wears off because people are looking for a new candidate or a new solution. It was interesting because we saw throughout the cycle, especially early on, that Rick Scott was favored to win. And as Gillum gained traction in the polls, you started to see that it was reflecting in Bill Nelson's numbers that Bill Nelson was going to win. So you go into Election Day going, oh, well, I mean, Gillum's going to win. He's consistently up in every poll. And he's going to take Bill Nelson with him. Well, last night, the polls didn't accurately reflect those pockets of Republican voters in the state of Florida that were going to come out and not only vote for DeSantis, but vote for Rick Scott, too. And I wish I knew the number off the top of my head on who had more votes between the two, but I imagine they were close. And I think that is why you have a governor and senator from the GOP that just got elected last night.
Well, now let's come to Ohio, and let's start at the top here. Now, the governor's race, in all the results, or all the polls that were taken up to the election last night, showed it was a pretty, well, a dead heat, but that Cordray was a few points ahead. Obama came here and campaigned for him. Joe Biden came here and campaigned for him. A lot of big names were here campaigning for him. Elizabeth Warren was in the state last week campaigning for Cordray. And what was supposed to be a dead heat, what was supposed to be Cordray by two, ended up being Mike DeWine by more than 4 points.
And that's remarkable. Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable. And, you know, as we saw the election kind of winding down, you saw polls that had anywhere between Cordray up by three to DeWine by one. And, you know, at that point, when it gets that close to the election and it's that such a dead heat, my immediate instinct is to go, okay, well, it's about turnout now. Who can turn out the voters better? The Republicans in Ohio are coming out in flocks. And this kind of goes back to the point I made earlier about, you know, take Georgia, for example. Georgia might be considered more competitive at this point than Ohio. You have to look at it objectively. Statewide, with the exception of 2012, Republicans have dominated in statewide elections, and they proved it again last night.
Well, here's a question about that, because Monday, you know, kind of the time for talk was over when we made these predictions, and you predicted Cordray, and he lost by four. Now, all the polls and all the rigmarole were pretty well over by Monday. What ultimately was Cordray's flaw that people would not turn out? Because it was very interesting. We had a huge amount of early turnout. Here's the facts on this, because I think this is important when we talk about Ohio. We had a huge amount of early turnout, over a million people. We had 50% of the people in Marion who are registered voters voted. 50% in a midterm election. We'll come locally to that in a second. But the early vote, Cordray was up over 60%. So we did find out that the Democrats did turn out early, and they turned out in big numbers, over a million people. But on the day of election, the people who saw every ad, who made their decision when they walked into the polling place yesterday, pulled the trigger for DeWine in such a large margin, it wiped out the early vote and threw him ahead by 4 points. Why was that?
And I think you made a really excellent point. You know, we go in, and I can't recall if you just said the number or not, but Cordray was up by 7% early voting. You know, that is what Democrats would need to do to be successful. But when it comes down to election day, and this is the stigma that we've always known about early vote, is Democrats need to do well in early vote if you want to win by the end of election day, because Republicans are going to catch up.
They did very well in early voting.
Yes. And I don't know if that stigma should even exist anymore, that, oh, well, Democrats own early voting. I mean, do they? I mean, we look at Marion County, more Republicans came out in early voting than Democrats.
Well, I don't want to come to Marion quite yet, because statewide, I think this is an important point to make. Statewide, early voting was gigantic, especially in Franklin County, Columbus. And it did throw Cordray. By the time all the early voting was done, Cordray was ahead. He was up in the 60% margin. So Democrats did turn out the early vote, and they turned it out over a million voters. And they turned it out by a lead of about 15 percentage points. But on election day, that was all erased.
It's all erased because, and again, it goes back to that stigma we've always known. Democrats are going to do well in the early vote, and Republicans are going to catch them on election day. And if the Republicans pass you at any point as they're counting in the votes from election day, it's going to be really, really hard for a Democrat to win. That was the case last night. And you start to see that, you know, some of these city precincts and everything, it took a little while to get in. So there are pockets of Democratic votes that stick out. And this isn't exclusive to Ohio. I mean, this is most statewide elections. You're going to see city votes coming in a little later on, which is encouraging to Democrats. But this is what's getting so confusing to people, is that, you know, Democrats are going up early. You see motivation, you see excitement, and then you start to see the Republican creep back in. And people are going, but wait. There might be a Democratic stronghold coming in. There very well could be, and there very well couldn't. And we even saw, like, in 2016, that happened in a lot of states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, where these votes that were expected to come in just didn't. And it leads us to a lot of different theories about what we need to do moving forward, because that's on my mind right now, is how do we fix this moving forward? I mean, do you turn out more Democrats in early voting, or, you know, how do you stop the onslaught of election day votes that are coming in that counter your Democratic candidates? I mean, there's a lot of different theories as to how to handle this. I imagine that early voting is just going to get bigger, and we're going to have a really good understanding of who is exactly voting when and what candidate is being supported.
Yeah, but
right
there
now,
was...
early voting is really, really hard to determine who is being successful.
Well, I think this is not to be a pushed aside. We had no incumbent. The incumbent governor did not endorse DeWine until last Friday and did it kind of quietly. DeWine was not a particularly charismatic candidate, and yet people turned out to vote in high voter turnout. And it was always said that high voter turnout means good things for the Democrat. High early voting turnout means good things for the Democrat. But
now we don't know if those things are true.
Well, certainly not in Ohio, they're not true. And this in this election, well, in this election, something else I think very important too. The House did go back to the Democrats, so it's not like Democrats didn't have a good night last night. They just didn't have a good night in Ohio. Now
or Florida.
Yeah, but why in Ohio? What was Cordray's flaw? What was the problem there?
You know, and I wish I had an answer to that, because I don't think it's immediately clear. I don't know what Cordray's flaw was, because as far as his early vote totals, he did just fine. Maybe it was the president's visits that motivated his supporters to get out, because you said it before I got the chance to. It was amazing how high this voter turnout was for a midterm election, and Republicans were really competitive. It's been talked about for the longest time that there's going to be high Democratic motivation, and there certainly was. I mean, there was an extremely high number of votes that came in and supported Democrats, not just in the state of Ohio, but nationally. You do see a trend that there was a flock of Democratic voters that made their way to the polls nationwide, but GOP voters were motivated too, and you see this huge clash that comes to the midterm, where the GOP broke that kind of rumor and that suspected belief that, oh, well, Democrats are going to turn out in such a huge way that the GOP can't possibly match. No, the GOP matched, and they matched really well in a lot of these even red states like Indiana and like Missouri and North Dakota and Montana, where there was a lot of reason going into election day that the Democrats were going to keep those seats, and they didn't. And so this is the really interesting thing as we move forward and as we still analyze what votes are coming when. That's the magic question, I think, on everyone's mind.
Well, let's go locally now, because this was fascinating, because we really only had two races locally here that were Democrat and Republican. County Commissioner seat, Tara Dyer and Ken Stiverson, and the prosecutor's race, Jeff Ratliff and Ray Grogan. Now, before we get to the prosecutor's race, which I think was the most high profile, let's start with the commissioner's race. Now, you did predict that Ken Stiverson would keep that seat. Did you think it would be 61-34, or whatever it was?
Well, that's around the numbers that we saw in 2014 for Ken, so it's not an anomaly, and it's historically correct. It was very interesting, because earlier on, the vote was a little bit tighter, and again, as you get into election day, one thing that we can conclude about Marion politics is that Republicans are coming out on election day for Republicans. We are going to see GOP voters come out in flocks on election day. And you started to see that gap really widen. So about the county commissioner's race, and you see that going into the prosecutor's race, the vote totals are very similar.
But now here's something. Yeah, but here's something I want to point out about that. the prosecutor's race before we move into that.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there was a story in the paper not too long ago that the Democrat outspent the Republican in this race. The Republican, Ray Grogan, was not elected to that position. He was just put in that position. And you predicted on Monday that Jeff Ratliff would win. And he lost by just about the same margin that Tara Dyer lost. 61% for Ray Grogan, under 40 for Jeff Ratliff. Why was that?
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned that. I gave a lot of weight to what that campaign was doing, what that campaign was spending, and the amount of traction that that campaign was getting publicly. But something that held weight in this election the same way it held in 2016 is countywide Republicans are getting matching totals to the top of the ticket, meaning Marion County voters are going to the polls, or specifically the ones that are voting Republican, and they are voting straight Republican down the line, starting from the top and going down local.
That's
what you saw.
Well, that's what I said. I said that on Monday, I think, when we talked. I said if whatever Cordray turns out in Marion, that's about where the Democrats are going to be. And it was. DeWine won by over 60% in Marion, and Cordray was in the 30s.
And that's what you're seeing. It's a trend. Countywide, Republicans are performing at about the same levels. And I would love to look at the specific numbers, but I think Jeff maybe had, I don't know, 300, 400 more votes than Tara. I mean, that's astonishing considering what both campaigns raised. I mean, one campaign raised a lot more than the other, and yet you only see a 300-vote difference. That, to me, is remarkable. It leads to, you know, another theory, obviously, that we have to think about in the future. What does it mean in Marion County to have your own individual campaign? Or is Marion County decided based on its party index? Based on the previous elections, I think it's abundantly clear that Republicans are going to do well countywide, and it doesn't matter where you are on the ticket. If you have an R next to your name, you're probably going to do pretty well.
Well, here's what I want to point out since 2016. In 2016, when President Trump won Marion County over Hillary Clinton, down ticket in every single race, we saw just about the similar turnouts for the election of Republicans. The only Democrat to win that year was the Sheriff Bailey. Now, we went to last year, which was an off year, not as many people turned out, and yet, for the first time in a long time, the city council went Republican, and not only did it go Republican, but it threw out its two oldest members, longest-serving members, Ralph Cumston and Mike Thomas. And this year, it seemed to get even worse for the Democrats locally. There was a high voter turnout. There was 50% of registered voters in Marion turned out. If 50% of registered voters in Marion, and those, if that's the demographic we saw last night, 50%, only 60%, 64% turned out in the last presidential. If 50% of Marion County voters give a result of 60-30, I don't know what that does for the Democrats.
I mean, it shows that there's a lot of inroads that have to be made countywide and a lot of coalitions that have to be built if Democrats want to compete in Marion again. And you know, as far as the city, you can consider it a toss-up at this point. I don't think it necessarily leans either way, and that's contrary to how I felt in the past. I generally felt that the city leans Democratic. Right now, I'm interested in what the precinct numbers look like in the city of Marion. Like, take out the county in this equation, just the city of Marion. I think the Republicans did very well in the city. This is going to be a really interesting theme as we go into even next year with the city election.
Well, here's something important about the city elections, and this is where I want to point this out. Because there was, I asked the mayor when he was here yesterday and he was here last week, and I asked the mayor and he said he is running for re-election and that he had no intention to take a job with Rich Cordray in Columbus. Well, now after the election, we know two things for sure. There is going to be no job with Rich Cordray in Columbus because Rich Cordray is not going to be in Columbus. And the mayor is running for re-election. Now, we have got 12 months. The last time the mayor ran for re-election was your election back in 2015. 2016, things have changed. If I were the Democratic mayor of Marion running for a fourth term, last night might give me some serious pause.
You know, I definitely recognize where you come from. I think when it comes to city elections and when it comes down to Mayor Schertzer's popularity in the city, I think that he's in good shape and he's well-equipped to be reelected. But I don't know what the landscape looks like as far as party index goes for next year. I mean, and there's a lot to be determined. Mayor Schertzer's at the top of the ticket. We'll see how that does for the down-ballot Democrats. I'm really anxious to see how 2019 goes. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well,
I know I'll have fun.
Well, it's interesting because when I look at this right now, and I don't think the landscape was this when I covered this back in 2007 when the mayor was first elected, or even 2015 when he was reelected. The city council, when he runs now, is majority Republican. All three commissioner seats are Republican. The prosecutor is Republican. The governor will be Republican. I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting. And if we believe what we have heard, for the first time, Mayor Schertzer will face a primary from Ed McCants on the Democratic side. And we don't even know who the Republican candidate is right now, but they've got to be feeling pretty confident. The Republicans have won these elections by large margins. Ralph Cumston losing to Robert Landon. Robert Landon had never held political office, and Ralph Cumston had been there as long as Mike Thomas.
Was there a question in there?
Well, I just think it's Marion is a different landscape now, and I don't know. I'm not saying the mayor can't do it, but I think this will be his most difficult election.
You know, I don't think that's unreasonable to say, because we talked about a little bit earlier that as the incumbency continues, people start to go, well, when are we going to get a change? I mean, that's just natural, regardless who the office holder is. It could be the Pope, and politically it doesn't change the fact that people still want change after long periods of time. I'm very confident that Mayor Schertzer is going to get reelected. I think that he's going to win his primary, and I think he's going to win the general. He's a very popular mayor. He has always done well in the 6th Ward, for example, in the 6th Ward, being out in like Chateau, that area, that's the most Republican area of the city. He's the only Democrat that wins that, you know, that ward. So Mayor Schertzer has a unique electability factor to his candidacy that other Democrats don't experience. I don't want to write off Mayor Schertzer's ability to get reelected, because I'm thoroughly confident he will. The question is, what happens down ballot? What happens to the rest of the candidates that are running?
I think he can get reelected. I'm not saying he can't get reelected.
Sure. No,
what I'm saying is, I think it's going to be more difficult. I think since the last time he ran, Facebook has blown up. I think since the last time he ran, Donald Trump has become president. I think since the last time he ran, the numbers have gotten far more extreme to the Republican side in Marion County. And since the last time he ran, the voter count is way up. The voter turnout. And apparently, that's favoring Republicans.
And, you know, we'll see how a primary shapes out. I mean, there is no primary yet because neither candidate has filed. And we don't know who the Republicans are going to file. We don't know until middle of February. So, you know, if Mayor Schertzer ends up with a primary, he very well could. He very well couldn't. I don't imagine he's going to have any issue getting reelected.
But you don't even know who the Republicans are running. Isn't that a little odd to say?
It's not odd to say, because the mayor is popular. The mayor is well-liked. And the mayor has historical electoral performance that other Democrats don't share.
Well,
candidates matter. Local candidates do matter.
Right, but didn't Mike Thomas and Ralph Cumston have a long history of reelectability as Democrats? Also, it's also coincidental to me that they were both Democrats.
Yeah, and look at the numbers back in 2015. Mayor Schertzer outperformed both of them. in their wards. You know, Mike Thomas in the third. Mayor Schertzer had more votes in the third than Mike Thomas did in the third. And Mayor Schertzer had more votes in the first than Ralph Kumpston in the
first. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think the Republicans had a strong candidate in 2015?
Not necessarily, no. I don't think so.
Do you think that in those wards they had strong opposition?
Well, considering Mike and I's race was down to provisional ballots and we had to wait 2 weeks after the election, I would say in the third, yeah. And in the first, no, I don't think the first was extremely competitive. But we look at the third ward numbers, and I've outperformed every Republican that ran in the third ward, and it wasn't even close.
Well, wouldn't that then explain why Mayor Schertzer received more votes there than Mike Thomas did?
I think it's part of the equation, but at the end of the day, candidates have a responsibility to get out and turn out their voters, and Mayor Schertzer is still outperforming long-term councilmen who, respectively, are not in their positions anymore.
Well,
in the sixth ward,
but
no Democrats getting the numbers that Mayor Schertz is getting
in 2015.
That's part of the election.
In 2015, yeah. Though, I don't know that local. I got to take issue with that though. Not about the mayor. I'm talking about everybody now. I'm talking about money spent. I'm talking about down ticket vote. That is real. And the longer the Democrats continue to deny that in Marion County, they are going to have bad results.
Because 10 out of 10 agree with you.
Okay.
I absolutely do.
Well, if we say, well, the mayor did this in 2015, and the mayor was... Well, in 2015, the vote turnout was not high. In 2015, President Obama was president, and Trump was not even thought of, or had just announced he was running. It's a different landscape. More people are registered. More people are engaged. When in a midterm have we had 50% turnout?
Oh, it's remarkable. Oh, it's astonishing. It's unheard of.
And it turned out to the Republicans' favor. And when, I mean, if we go back to Brent Yeager, and which hasn't been all that long ago, God rest his soul, Brent Yeager, the Republican, and Mark Russell, the Democrat, the numbers were not, and they even had a third candidate in that race, and it was not as blown out as it was last night.
I think that speaks volume to how well Republicans are being elected countywide. That's something that us as Democrats, we have to continue to work on.
And isn't
it involves reaching out to new pockets of voters. It ensures that we have to turn out more of our voters, and it has to ensure that we have to improve our early vote numbers, because Republicans are going into early vote, or going into election day with the early vote lead. That's disastrous. That explains why we're losing by 30 points in these races. Like, that explains why we're having a difficult time winning countywide, because we are not even turning out our voters in early vote. And that is a critical component to Democrats getting elected. And that's something that we've talked about on a statewide level. That's something we've talked about on a national level. You have to turn out your voters in early vote. If you don't, you're going to lose.
But isn't it also significant? I wouldn't have thought it till last night, because I would have said, well, it was the Trump effect in 2016, and that maybe a little of that was left hanging over, and that's how the Republicans took control of city council last year. But after last night, I believe it. I believe that people vote down ballot in Marion County, and I believe that more Republicans are engaged now in early voting in Marion County. They're engaged more on Election Day in Marion County. Yesterday, I was at the Vets Memorial Coliseum. I ran into somebody who told me by 3:30, they had expected the entire day to have 200 votes per table. By 3:30, all the tables had already exceeded that, and some 300. Who knows what they were by 7:30 last night? That was at 3:30. And yet the Republicans won by larger margins than they did in the last midterm.
Absolutely. And I would like to cite, I think, one of your favorite examples about the 2016 Tim Bailey being the anomaly and winning his race even though every other countywide Republican won by the same margin that Trump was winning over Clinton. I think that you're going to experience something that maybe could happen, very well could, in the 2019 city elections. But this is something that we know about local elections, that the more local you make it, the more important it is on the person. We may not see the party play as much of a role. That's traditionally what we know about local elections. So your assessment very well could lead to the same thing that we've seen in 2016 and 2018, or it could continue what I think could happen in 2019, that as you get more local, the quality of the candidate is really going to be the major factor.
Well, here's what I want to point out about this, and two points in our last 8 minutes here, and this is fascinating. What I would say about Tim Bailey, because Tim Bailey has had competitive elections. Rigney, when he ran against Rigney, that was razor thin in that election. I would say that in 2016, Bailey being the anomaly, the only Democrat to win that year, I don't think he had as strong as competition as he had when he ran against Rigney, and I think the vote count shows that. Also, we had a Republican president, again, who won a lot in 2016, but I do think the competition was not as strong in 2016 for Bailey as it was when he ran against Rigney. I think, like I said, just the ballot totals show that. Now, again, if the Republicans have a weak candidate for mayor, I go right along with you as far as the mayor is concerned. But
so you're suggesting that Scherzer versus a quality Republican leads to
a different
possible
race.
Republican mayor.
A different,
okay.
Well, listen, before Mayor Scherzer, we had 24 years of Republican mayor.
Yeah, we did. I mean, Jack Kellogg was there for a long time, and
well, Jack Kellogg was there.
Please forgive me. I don't know who's his predecessor.
Jack Kellogg was there for 16, and Doc Brown was there for 8. 24 years of Republican mayors before Mayor Scherzer.
And then we see 12 years of a Democratic mayor. What does that suggest about the way Marion City votes for its mayor? Quality of candidate. So,
well,
quality candidate.
You're right. Quality candidate matters, but what I'm saying to your objection is, I don't know who the Republicans are running. I can't make that decision until they run. If they put a quality candidate in there, if they put somebody in there who's a go-getter, if they put somebody in there who can speak to change, if they put somebody in there who is a fan of Donald Trump, I think it's a completely different race.
It very well could be, but you know. Just like, I'm sure you and I will kick back and we'll see how everything goes.
I think it's fascinating. But here's a bigger point. Two questions in our remaining 6 minutes. Last night was supposed to be the big night for Democrats. The Democrats had the momentum. Not in Ohio. Why?
That's the million-dollar question, and that's something I don't think there's an immediate answer on. And at least for the next couple of months, as we continue to dissect, well, what went wrong? I mean, what we've traditionally known about Democrat struggles in the state of Ohio is that we're not getting enough support out in rural counties. Example, Marion. We're just not getting the vote totals that are needed because you look at the state of Ohio, there's 88 counties. There's about 10 that are pretty reliably blue. I mean, you're talking Franklin County, Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, Hamilton County, which is Cincinnati. I mean, you're starting like Lucas County, that's Toledo. You see an underlying theme that the counties that have the bigger cities, Democrats do well in, and there's going to be lots of votes. But that alone, as indicative of the last few election cycles, is not enough to catapult the Democrat above the statewide numbers that they're getting in the other 75 to 80 counties. So my immediate synopsis is we're not getting enough voters in rural communities to come out and support our candidate. How do we overturn that? How do we show that Democratic policies are going to be good in raising your wages and protecting you against a government that's trying to take away your health insurance because you have a pre-existing condition? How do we fight to make sure that women have access that women have the access to their body rights and that gun owners are protected. All these things are critical components to how do we get Democrats elected in the state of Ohio. We're not reaching rural voters. We're reaching the city voters just fine. I mean, even in 2016, Franklin County, Clinton outperformed Obama, yet Obama in 2012 wins and Clinton loses because Obama was picking up counties that Clinton couldn't. And that's really, really showing why Democrats are having a hard time winning statewide.
In our 3 minutes, and I want to get one more question, I just want to point this out because I think statistics do matter when it comes to this. When we look back at 2015, which is the last time we had a mayoral election, Marion County had 38,000 registered voters. Yesterday, they had 40,298 registered voters. The turnout in 2015 in the mayoral race, total votes cast, 7,041. Yesterday, total votes cast, 20,282.
I'm sorry, quick rewind on that.
Yeah. In 2015, the last time we had a mayoral election, the total registered voters in Marion County, 38,252. Yesterday, registered voters, 40,298. The turnout in the mayoral election in 2015, 7,041 total votes cast for mayor. Yesterday, total votes cast in Marion County, 20,282. Nearly triple.
So, and the truth is we're probably looking at this around the same voter turnout in 2019 that we see in 2015.
You think about 7,000 will turn out again?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it might be up, maybe an additional couple thousand people, but you're not going to see much interest, at least not as much interest as you would see in a midterm or a presidential.
A couple thousand could have swung that the other way.
Very well could have.
When there's only 7,000 total voters. But here's a point I want to make up in our last minute. I think we'll talk about the mayor because that's going to start now and go on through November. But the city council people, too, they got to be thinking as well. Do they want to run for mayor? Do they think it's doable, these Republican council people? That's a good spot to go from, I would think, if you're a Republican right now. But last night I kept thinking of something. The Democrats were supposed to win Florida gubernatorialships. They were supposed to win Senate. Same thing in Ohio. They didn't. They continued to lose. Was Hillary Clinton really a flawed campaign? Because it continued last night.
Well, you look at the way Democrats competed in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. Yeah, someone that says that Clinton was a flawed candidate, I've always battled back and forth between that. I mean, Democrats obviously performed the way they should in this election in those states that if Hillary would have won, I don't have the math immediately in front of me, Hillary is elected president.
So does that mean Ohio and Florida are now Republican areas? Because if Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania last night were able to do better Democrat, certainly not the case in Ohio and Florida than Hillary did.
Right. No, absolutely, and just in the last couple of elections, Florida is still a pure toss-up. I mean, those vote totals were very, very tight, and I think that that's something you're probably going to see in 2020. Now, in Ohio, Trump performed above, it was in Texas as far as its competitiveness. I mean, it was in the realm of Georgia in its competitiveness.
Seven percentage points.
Yeah, I mean, that's not battleground.
No,
it's not battleground.
No, but again, when we look at Marion County and when we look at most of the counties, 80% of the counties, DeWine was winning by bigger margins than seven last night, and he won the election by more than four.
Yeah, and there has to be a lot that changes, and I think it might be internally with just the way that we're messaging our candidates statewide. I mean, again, I think that there's a lot of answers that are going to come out of this that I think it's going to be an evolving conversation over the next couple months. But for the meantime, to answer your question, I'm not certain that if Bernie Sanders was the Democratic nominee, he would have beat Donald Trump. I mean, knowing what we know about the electoral landscape right now, I don't know if Bernie Sanders would have been elected.
Or Joe Biden. You know, I would put him in there.
Yeah, very well could. We get to that point, it might be a little arbitrary because he never stepped foot into the race. I don't know.
I would just say this in our party. This is always fun talking to you. We don't go on forever. But I would just say this. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, President Obama were all in Ohio campaigning for Cordray. Trump was in Ohio campaigning for DeWine. DeWine won by 4. Draw your own conclusions in Ohio.
I think that's fair to say.
Tanner, it's always my pleasure. You're always welcome here, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you, Scott. It's always a pleasure. You know I always have a blast, and we're going to be talking very soon.
We are, certainly. Thank you, Tanner.
Hey, thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
And now we are going to take a break and come back with Eleanor Cliff. More election talk.
Pick up. The WWGH offices are located at 559.